Welcome to the Adam Savage Project. I'm Adam.
I'm Norm.
I'm Joey.
Joey!
Hello.
Welcome, Joey.
There you go.
How is the weather down south in Southern California, sir?
It's very warm where I'm at. I'm kind of deep in the valley where it's 90s kind of the last. I don't remember the last time it's been like real, like not nice, like 70. It's strange. Like this area is like pretty, the weather's great for like eight months out of the year. And then those 3 to 4 months are just like, you don't remember what good weather feels like. It's just hot and hellscape. And especially now with like fires and smoke, it just feels, yeah. It feels wicked down here. But other than that, it's okay.
We had some fires kick up here too. I smelled them last night. I noticed, I've become really sort of, I don't know about you, but like I sit on the deck and I look at the moon and I'm always noticing Jupiter and Saturn sitting up there together. And it's really specific when there's just even like a AQI of like 60 or more, I stop being able to see even the brightest stars.
So it's visibility. It's not.
Smell.
It's the tinting of the sky, even the subtlest tinting.
Yeah.
Everything. It's like there's like a big silk across the sky.
Yeah.
It's like Ken Burns is running a sepia on reality. Is what's happening.
Well, we have Joey here this week because we are doing a spoiler cast, which
yes.
You figured out from the title of the show. We're going to be talking about the Amazon Prime show The Boys Season 2, which is for this season airing week by week. We're going to first kind of give a little recap of Season 1. So spoilers for Season 1 are kind of fair game in terms of establishing
absolutely
the characters and who they are. And then we wanted to bring Joey in because you've been enjoying the show. Also, you know, head of our production, you are experimenting with a lot of camera gear and lenses and want to bring your perspective into this.
Absolutely. Awesome.
Looking forward to it.
So
you want to give the recap for Season 1, Norm?
Yeah. So the show, if you haven't watched it, it is based on a comic book written by Garth Ennis. It's really this kind of over-the-top, gritty take on what it would be like if a Justice League equivalent were all filled with immoral superheroes, right? This is these soups, as they call them, are public-facing in their goody-two-shoes, but in their private lives, they're kind of all assholes.
One of the things I love about this construction is that, of course, every superhero movie it finishes on the idea that the superpower isn't what makes the superhero special. It's the true, pure morality of their heart and their love for their fellow humans and their families, right? And this just is like the other side of that coin. Yeah, if that is what makes you super, what the hell is it like if you're not? If you're not morally straight and true and you don't have empathy, and the results are some of the most frightening villains I've ever considered seriously in like narratives.
It's like, so none of these people had like Uncle Ben's or Mr. Kent's, whoever Clark Kent's dad is, to give him that moral compass.
Well, and that's built into the narrative of the show, because one of the big reveals of Season 1, I can say this, right, is Compound V, is that superheroes are made by this company called Vought, and they literally like find mothers and inject their babies and turn them into superheroes, and no one's supposed to talk about it. No one has talked about it.
Yeah, and the heroes are all, they're very human in that they're all insecure and they all have their own vices and their failings and various degrees of power. So you have your analogs to, you know, your Aquaman, your hero who could talk to fish, and they totally poke fun at that. You have your Superman archetype of with the laser beam and then vulnerability and the flight. You have your Wonder Woman, you know, analog. And then their antagonists are basically the people trying to take them down and expose them. The Boys, the group led by Billy Butcher, played by Carl Urban, who has a vendetta against their Superman equivalent, Homelander.
And I just would like to do a shout out here for how great it is to see Carl Urban anchoring a franchise for real. I mean, you know, it's long been talked about how great his performance in Dread 3D is and how amazing it was in service of the franchise, but kind of like not being front and center of that movie at the same time as being front and center. He's always been an amazing actor, and he really shines in this series. It's a wide, varied, strange, and awesome role.
He commands every scene he's in. Like that's the perfect example of that.
And so the boys team, you know, this group that's trying to take down the Seven, are Carl Urban, it's Jack Quaid, who plays kind of the hapless kid Huey, whose girlfriend dies at the hands
Dennis
of
Dennis Quaid's Spielberg. Son, by the way.
Yes. And Meg Ryan's son too. He
oh, looks like right, a perfect of course.
Combination of his parents.
One pretty kid.
As well as you have a French demolitions expert, a Frenchie, you have Mother's Milk, and then you have, they have a superhero on the, of their own, the female, who is, yes, who's mute and has gone through her own trauma. And all of this is part of the revelation that the superheroes of the world are created through chemicals, and then also the ulterior motive of this Vought Corporation of creating profits and commercializing the hero. So you have a lot of this meta awareness and acknowledgement of the commercialization of superhero culture, of the filming of movies, of the planning up of their team ups, and all that's very fun. In addition to it being extremely violent, they don't hold back. You know, there's a bunch there to show them, you know, downing airplanes and laser blasting through people.
And they do slow play that a little bit. It's a couple of episodes before you realize just how awful Homelander is. And it isn't until the end of the season, really, that you get what a completely morally bankrupt, terrifying thing he is.
So the end of season one, it's revealed that Homelander, grown in a lab, no moral compass, but the
never had parents, never had any love whatsoever. I mean, yes. He's literally like a poster child for attachment disorder.
Exactly.
Infantile, to his handler. Just drinking milk just as a child with to a milk bottle.
Breast milk specifically.
Elizabeth Shue's breast milk, even more specifically.
The revelation is that he has a secret son with Butcher's wife, who he thought was dead. So
that's kind of the final
Butcher
scene.
Spends the whole first season thinking his wife is dead, and it turns out that she was raped by Homelander. She's alive, and so is their kid. And the finale of the first season is Butcher seeing his wife for the first time in the show.
And so that's a hell of a cliffhanger. And going into the second season, you wonder, how can this resolve? Butcher's in this extremely precarious situation. There's this huge X factor of Homelander having a son. How is that going to change him? And without going into the plot details yet, we can say that they found a way to kind of realign to back to kind of the normal back and forth between the Seven with new tensions within, and then also this ragtag team of the boys and their attempt to take down Vought and the Seven.
I want to talk a little bit here, as you said, bring it back to a reset. One of the crazy difficulties of television writing is building a format that both feels safe and yet not like you're just spinning your wheels in the same location and the same kind of setup every single time. And the boys rides that line really, really well. They're able to raise the stakes, change the game, and then it doesn't feel unreasonable when they bring it back to something familiar.
And I feel like on edge the whole time, because the power dynamics of these characters are such that, you know, it's completely uneven, right? If one misstep, and if the story went one way, there could be no story, right? And so it's this balance of how do you show that they are, it's a cat and mouse game, and that they can get the better of each other and be subversive and infiltrate them without feeling like, you know, the Homelander character can just kill everyone.
Right.
Oh yeah, I was thinking about that a bit last night too. The fighting. I mean, as much of a stylized show it is, I mean, it does very much look and kind of feel like a Zack Snyder, you know, Watchmen or Justice League. But the fighting, you never see superheroes kind of fighting each other. It's always like very quick explosion of violence, and you do realize that power dynamic is like so intense. Like there is no punching back and forth. I mean, except for like one scene you see in season two, which we can get into later. But like, it really is like there is this menacing, like terrifying feeling of like being like every human that stands in front of a super, and where things start to like tension starts to escalate. Yeah, like I get like chills, like just like, oh God, how would I handle this? Like I cannot, one wrong thing, one wrong word, and you're dead.
You're reminding me, Joey, that the second season does that a lot. They let you watch the penny drop in somebody else's face as they're standing opposite Homelander and realizing the malevolent threat that they are directly in front of. I always find it super chilling. And the actor that plays Homelander is exceptional.
Yeah, Anthony Starr with right. Yeah, he has a grimace in him, that like the shit-eating grin.
There's a Bradley right? Cooper smile. Look to him.
Yeah,
and, but yeah, and he could tell when he's like, because he's a psycho, right? He's a sociopath. He's and but you can tell when he's insecure. That's when you're most afraid for everyone else in the show, because then he's out of control. And the show in the first season was all about how they could control him psychologically. And when those reins are off, then what happens?
Well, he's like the kid from the Twilight Zone episode, right? Everyone's got to keep him happy or he will literally burn the world down.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's one big shift from the second. I mean, can we talk a little bit about the second season now? The one big shift is like Homelander really was, there really was like that saving phase. Like he had his image and he tried, and like everything that he did that was real kind of menacing and dangerous kind of happened, you know, closed doors, not like people knew about it. The second season, it seems like that veil is kind of lifted. Like he's okay with people knowing how shitty he is and how insane he is, and like that. And then you can see the characters opposite of him. You can kind of see them try to deal with that, like knowing now that this character is much more out in the open than he was in the first season. It's a really interesting dynamic.
I know television writers, and I know that often season to season, they'll actually shift their focus on a series depending on where they think it should go. And they, you know, I know that they may even think that, you know, they may even take as a metric that the show's genre is slightly different than one season to the next. In The Boys, the biggest shift I saw in season two is that the subtext of white supremacy that sort of pervades the first season, but is very subtle, is directly text in the second season. It becomes text. And I feel like we should start to talk about spoilers for season two.
Let's do that, because so we're going to go into spoilers as when we're recording this, 6 episodes have been released. So it is week to week. There are 2 more episodes. So we don't know how it ends, but we're at the point where we're watching it, the last 2 episodes, things have escalated, specifically with a new character, Stormfront.
Hey guys, Adam here to let you know that today's podcast is brought to you by my friends at American Giant. And just to be clear, they're my friends because I fell in love with their product a few years ago and talked about it as one of my favorite things at the end of one of the years on Tested, and they reached out and sent our crew some more of their incredible clothing. They truly make the greatest hoodie you have ever put on. I literally live for weeks in that thing. Don't worry, I wash it. And right now, you can get 15% off your first order when you use promo code ADAMS at American-Giant.com. That's 15% off when you use code ADAMS, ADAMS, at American-Giant.com.
Yes, she's a new superhero joining the 7. She seems spunky. She reminded me at first of Jenny Slate. I thought, is this Jenny Slate for a brief second? She's got Jenny Slate's kind of sweet irreverence and kind of funny millennial sense of humor, which very quickly is revealed to hide a terrifying another sociopath.
Yeah, yeah. Aya Cash plays her from You're the Worst, and that kind of snarky, you know, very modern savvy that they initially introduce her with is in direct contrast with, you know, the kind of traditional celebrity status that you have in the 7, which I think they did intentionally to show like maybe Homelander isn't in touch with meme culture and how to best appease. But then it's quickly, again, like you said, revealed that she is actually over 100 years old.
Yeah, that is an awesome wrinkle. I also want to give a shout out to a character that shows up in season 1, is more prevalent in season 2, and it's the Colonel. It's the female CIA agent that originally hired Butcher and Mother's Milk and Frenchie to work for her. She's played by an actress named Layla Robbins, and I have a very Jean Smart vibe from her in that she's an older actress really enjoying a role in which she can chew stuff up and spit it out and have a lot of fun. We live in a world where there's not a lot of acting, not a lot of juicy acting roles for older women. And it's great to see a lot of television recently that has supplied that.
Yeah, both in this show, Lovecraft Country for sure, which we got to talk about at some point.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. She was brought in, referred to in season one a bit, but I think they did the big shocker in season two was they killed off their handler, their CI handler, in the very first episode. Like, her head explodes.
Jennifer Esposito, one of my favorite people in the world. I love her, and watching her head explode was tough.
There are a bunch of collapse heads in this season.
Yeah, like faces getting torn off, collapse heads, explosions, bodies.
The gore and the degree to which the camera just sits and shows you the gore is really a specific and interesting choice.
It's always like two frames too much. Like, oh, all right, let's move on.
Well, I mean, is it the most recent episode where they cleared out the hospital and the guy who vomits acid vomits on himself?
Burns himself. And then
you get like a 25-second shot of his face melting while he moans. It's horrific.
This is right before the giant member comes out of the door. And
I am curious, Norm, if you've seen any behind-the-scenes stuff that talked about the effects people, because I think that one of the things that's my favorite thing about season two is watching Homelander land.
Mm.
There's a shot early on in season two when he goes back to visit Butcher's wife and Homelander's kid, and you just see this kind of pastoral night scene of a yard and a tree, and Homelander's thunk and lands, and like leaves fall around him, and it's so, the physics of it are so perfect. I was reminded, and it might have been Kyle Hill who did this. Somebody pointed out years ago that if you were standing next to Superman and he took off at the speed of sound, you'd literally implode like a mantis shrimp was next to you.
Man of Steel did that kind of like the force of that kind of propulsion needed, right? Pretty well, you know, when it's the speed of like, it's not a graceful, you know, liftoff. It's violent. And you have a little bit of like the Matrix also, Matrix Reloaded, you know, when Neo is like gathering the energy, literally the ripples of that on the ground. I think the effects people, they know it's like the next iteration, next generation of what we've all saw off camera with the Christopher Reeve, you know, the crane of him just, you know, gently landing.
Even in the beginning of season one, when Homelander's looking for Translucent and he's flying over the neighborhood that Butcher's in, and you're seeing that whiz, whiz, whiz. There's very little going on in terms of a technical special effect in that, and yet the result is also terrifying when you think about what it's like to have Superman looking for you.
Yeah, and a lot of that sound too.
Yeah, exactly.
Just to back up real quick, we're talking about behind the scenes. This is a little Easter egg for, I don't know if you remember this, Adam, but when we shot the Expanse footage back in Toronto, the camera operator that shot all of our stuff, he's actually in episode two of this season playing a camera operator during the press junket.
So
through the camera, and he like when we showed up to Toronto, he like just got off that shoot. He's like, "Oh, it was in The Boys season two. I played a camera operator." It's like, that's too funny. And now you're here shooting our stuff.
I'll tell you, a bunch of the cast of The Boys was at C2E2 in Chicago when I was there in February. And the actress that plays Starlight was really lovely and told me, I said, season one was really messed up. And she's like, oh, you have no idea what you're in for season two. And she specifically said, what happens to Deep in season two is really messed up.
And they bring him back. That's not a thread. I mean, it's one of the great things about serialized television is that they can go deeper with those characters, right? Like Chase Crawford plays the Deep, you know, he kind of ended up in the middle of nowhere, Ohio, right? In season one, but they decided, hey, let's bring him back and go further. What would this character do with his insecurities, and how can we best make that interesting storytelling?
And what it's like to hit bottom, and what it's like to have your gills talk to you in Patton Oswalt's voice.
I just got done watching Happy, so just hearing Patton Oswalt as weird creatures has sort of become the normal for me.
Did you do the same double take I did? I was like, that has to be Patton Oswalt, but it can't be Patton Oswalt. Hold on, let me check. And it was.
It's one of the benefits of Amazon owning IMDb. You pause it in Prime. It tells you all the names of the characters. It's like, oh, that's really Patton Oswalt.
It might be one of the best features of Amazon Prime that they have, that X-ray vision, because it's terrific.
Let's try to see, where are we at this point with all the characters? So you have Starlight basically already defected. She's with
Starlight has had her chip removed. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. She's with the boys. You have the whole thing with Kimiko's brother, you know, he incredible superpowers with the telekinetic powers, you know, lifted a whole ship up. But then the way they had, you know, they use him as fodder because to reveal the villainy of Stormfront. But the way he died was just brutal. And we're still waiting to see, you know, Stormfront and the female clash.
Kimiko, it's when Stormfront kills the brother, and as she kills him, she forces, while he's dying, she forces him to look her in the eye because she says, quote, "I like watching the lights go out." And I don't know if that's a line from the comic book, but this is damn intense writing.
Yeah. Yeah. There's also a scene in the second to the most recent episode where you have Homelander basically in his fantasy killing everyone in a massive crowd.
I jumped out of my chair when that happened.
Yeah. I thought it was going to be like, that would have been a really, like, at some point the show may go that direction. Right. That's where it feels like it's barreling toward.
And it was how very little effort. He just looked essentially.
Yeah, right. So in the second season, as Stormfront shows up and sort of is the millennial who knows how to use social media, she's mixing things up. She's controversial and on purpose. And also she's not trying to get along with the others in any way. She's kind of being a jerk to them. And there's this point at which she taunts Homelander enough that his eyes start to glow. And like, she's gotten him angry enough to be murderous. Mm-hmm. And that's when she backs down just a little bit. And that whole interplay between them is fascinating. It hearkened to some really interesting plot developments that I think will happen in the future in terms of their dynamic with each other.
And she reveals everything, right? Like she's unable to control him, manipulate him, you know, just through sex, to a point where she has to be honest with him as a way to reveal the master.
As a way to manipulate.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say, that the revealing of everything, I think that's the one thing with her that I kind of wanted a little bit. I wanted her manipulation and infiltration into him and into the whole Seven to be a little bit a little more subdued. Like, I felt like she kind of came out at 11, right? Like, she came out and she, like, snarky, like you said, kind of had this attitude where my mind just automatically goes like, okay, yeah, she's going to do something. Like, it was kind of...
She has a plan.
I was kind of spelling it out a little bit too much for me. I thought it'd be interesting to have her really kind of make her way in through the traditional ways of becoming a good team player and then start to break down from inside. Once you like episode 5, it kind of ramps up with her, which is great.
It's pretty clear that they're harking towards a fight between her and Homelander.
I think the idea is that he's such a wild card. I mean, power level wise, it would just make sense. There's no one that they could pit against Homelander. And
that
I don't know.
We know of. I mean, that's
right. Sorry, right. Oh, right. Because there was the institution where you have these adult people with Compound V, very powerful.
And she's still
as well.
An unknown quantity. And she's still an unknown quantity, right? Yeah, he has powers. You can see her use them to great effect, actually to more effect than most of the other, I was going to say Watchmen. but, you know, she is, like, you finish season one going, who could face off against Homelander? He is literally all powerful, omnipotent, and terrifying, and he can hear for miles, and there's, like, nothing you could do. And she shows up, and you're starting to think, oh, actually, I guess someone can stand up to Homelander. I wonder what that's going to be like.
Yeah, and where is the show go, right? The escalation of it all, right? Like, if he's the most powerful, is the show more interesting when he's not the most powerful, or is the show more interesting when, as it has been, where he's the most powerful but everyone is trying to find all these ways to manipulate his insecurity to keep us on the brink, and that's where the tension is, because that's what it feels like season two is still about. Like the scene where he's in the trailer by himself and he bought her flowers and he's just staring at the flowers and kind of like cursing himself,
moving the little name tag around.
That's
like a superhero version of Jon Favreau's call from Singles.
Like the most intense.
I mean, there is like that. I mean, it goes back to that celebrityism. There is like the world, like everyone around him in his orbit are trying to handle him and manage and make sure, like, okay, no, don't do that. Like, that's not the good. Let's back up a little bit. And now it's just starting to become a little bit more. It's off the rails.
Yeah, you get the sense that they train him for his approval ratings, right? That right. These are things right. they train him to care about.
Right, like treats for a dog.
Exactly, yeah. exactly. So at what point does he not care about that?
Yeah, that's going to be scary.
And she's probably, I keep wanting to call her storefront. I don't know if you guys caught that Starbucks Easter egg. She was holding a Starbucks cup and it just said storefront. I was cracking up. I was,
oh, that's amazing.
That's totally something that would happen at Starbucks. But she might be the one who kind of cracks him out of that, right? Like the getting out of that mentality that, you know, all the ratings, all that stuff it really is kind of BS when it comes down to whatever her end goal is, trying to convince him that that should also be his.
I'm curious if the show is adding, this is an open question, because I haven't really thought about it before this podcast, but as we were talking, I was thinking about the fact that for the longest time, we had just like two kinds of superhero movies. We had Nolan and Snyder types of superhero movies. We had the dark and the foreboding, and we had dark and foreboding with weird comedy and visual specificity. This definitely seems more of a Snyder-type approach to adapting superhero dark material to the screen, and yet it's also kind of, it feels like it's setting its own path with the degree of gore and body horror. It feels like they're kind of setting out on their own.
It reminds me a little bit of Kick-Ass, mm-hmm. where but in that world, no one really had superpowers, but in this world, people do have the superpowers, and that's tough. Like that's, it's almost like too much unfettered world building you can do because like you're constrained by budgets. Right. And so the things that they've constrained themselves, the way things that they've helped guided themselves is this paradigm of like the commercialization of these heroes. So they have the framework of them making this movie, you know, right. the Rise of the Seven.
Yeah.
And that helps kind of bring everything more to a relatable, you know, a sense to us as viewers.
You're also, something else occurred to me. I realized that because it's a television show, their per episode budget is way lower than a feature film. So they probably have to parcel out how many Homelander lands shots right. they could actually achieve within a season. I mean, we know that from talking to Bob Monroe about The Expanse and What We Do in the Shadows. And I'm curious about the development, like does the team have in reserve? Like we can do this many of this thing and that many of that thing.
Like the old Superman show, they just keep reusing the same flying shot. Just, all right, just get back to that Homelander. Just, we just have them on the green screen. We just use that and change them around.
Exactly.
Now, well, real quick, was Lamplighter the guy who controlled the fire? Did he play Iceman?
Yes,
in X-Men?
Bobby Drake.
That's the
nice little stunt casting where he had ice powers in one and fire powers in the other.
All right, let's think about that.
That is a deep cut Easter egg.
Yeah, yeah. I do like that they give... Even though Homelander is the most powerful, they spend a ton of money with the deep, with his prosthetics, with the whale,
yeah,
right?
The whale
they built
scene,
an incredible whale set for a gag.
I mean, what was it last season? A dolphin gag? And this, they just upped it up to a whale.
And I mean, the whole, that shot where they go inside the whale to go get Huey and he's standing next to the last beats of the whale's dying, beating heart. And they're like, come on. And he's like, no. I'm good.
There's a little bit of, it's almost like a Zack, you mentioned Zack Snyder. It's almost like a Zack Snyder, like Edgar Wright kind of mashup. There's a little bit of like the humor and the violence doesn't quite feel like you can watch it and not feel completely disgusted, but also kind of humorous. It's a weird little
So let's talk about, there's a specific scene in which Kumiko starts taking hits to get rid of her rage about her brother dying. And she goes into these Russian guys and she grabs one by the ear and like a sardine can peels his face off the front of his head while she's staring at you at the camera and you're watching his face come off. I mean, it was like watching John Wick to a certain degree of like, they're super committed to this effect. They're doing it as realistically as possible. And it's so bizarre and weird and awful. It's actually funny.
Yeah.
It's also one of those things. I think that was it taken from the graphic novel, the comic book.
Yeah.
And I think it's Derek Robertson who does the art for the comic where, you know, it's obviously much cheaper in the comic to write that and then to draw that as a panel, which is still shocking because it's not something you typically see in a comic book. But to adapt that and make that shocking by having it linger on screen has that same effect by saying, you know, this is what a real superpowered character would be able to do, you know,
right,
in real world rules.
Yeah. And you're right, Joey. They don't waste a lot of time with fights where you're like, who's going to win this fight? They're all almost like one strike and the loser is dead.
Yeah, it's very effective for what they're trying to convey, the information they're trying to convey about who these people are and their temperament and like their attitude. And like,
there also is this other thing I just realized is in the first season, Vought and the Seven, the management of the Seven is under the iron fist of Elizabeth Shue's character. And she's terrific. It's great to see Elizabeth Shue again, and she's wonderful in that whole first season. But the second season also deals with the fact that there's a power vacuum. She was the one with the vision. She was holding it all together, literally holding Homelander's psyche together by letting him drink her breast milk. I can't even believe I just said that sentence.
And who takes her place is under Homelander's thumb, and she's completely in over her head.
Right. Right. And that's actually a fascinating dynamic to unpack over the course of the second season. Oh, and also because he's in every other show, Giancarlo Esposito shows up as the CEO of Vought. And oh my God, I was so happy to see him.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how that they're going to reconcile his running of that company with the origins of that company with Vought and Stormfront.
Interesting.
So
yeah,
that's where we're going to explore the next two episodes, I think.
Yeah, I want him to show up at some point with a dark sword.
He's on all the prestige, every prestige show. I think we're just about out of time, so we're gonna. Any last thoughts before we're the final two episodes?
Yeah, I just want to talk about this a little bit of like that. The difficulty, the Boys makes it look easy, but it is a non-trivial thing to take an over-the-top, graphically horrifying graphic novel and turn it into interesting television or film. Like that, just that translation, we've seen so many ridiculous and terrible attacks upon that problem that they're doing an incredible job with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it's so successful. They did announce they're going to do a spinoff of The Boys.
Ooh.
It's going to be, I think, on a college campus with Supes, you know, in and Supes in school, I think.
Huh.
A younger Supes. So it's definitely something that Amazon investing in, and they're putting the money on the screen.
Well, our people at Amazon. Hey, Amazon, can you embed us for season 3 of The Boys? We tested wants to go. I'll make my own superhero costume. without guilt. Without guilt.
Yes, yes, yes.
Is Joey, I'm curious if there's like a standout, if there's something standout in the second season so far that's really knocked your socks off.
I really like what they're doing, where they're going with. I mean, I he's a despicable character, but the Deep is really like just watching him. It's like, wow, you are really, there's something really going for something really crazy here. Yeah. And again, that whale scene gag was just cracking me up. The Huey and Butcher relationship grew on me a lot more. Mm-hmm. Kind of really thinking more about like the canary element of it, and like where is Butcher's like. Where's his moral compass? And is it in this hapless kid? Like, is he, you know, looking to him to make sure he doesn't go too far and become, you know, worse than them? So there's like the things that were kind of sleepers for me in the first season and the beginning of the second season are really starting to become much more interesting for me. I thought the fifth and sixth episodes were like just fantastic.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
I have a prediction.
Yes.
I think Butcher is going to get superpowers at some point.
Oh, all right.
I was watching him and thinking how little we'd seen him actually fight until he goes up against Black Noir. And yeah. He's so fearless. I was like, is he hiding that he actually has a superpower? And is the fact that he despises Supes because he might have become one over the course of the show? Like, that's a really interesting dynamic to unpack.
Becoming the thing he hates the most. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And they've established that adults can unpredictably get the powers now. That's something to think about. I want more Black Noir. I'll leave it at that.
Black Noir. Black Noir is a great character.
Thank you, Joey, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
This week we'll be trying to do one every month or so, and kind of talking about films and TV shows that we're watching and enjoying in this lockdown. But otherwise, we'll also be resuming our interview series in the future. So until then, we'll see you all next time.
See you guys next time.
Bye.
Bye, Joey. Bye, Noah. Bye.